It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, our guest says we should have a record-breaking hiking trail going all the way around the coasts of the entire Great Lakes.
First, a young white man opened fire on a prayer group last night at the historical Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina. He sat with the group for almost an hour before drawing his gun and killing nine people.
A witness quoted the man as saying, quote, "I have to do it. You rape our women and you're taking over our country and you have to go," end quote. Charleston Police Chief Greg Mullen called the shooting a hate crime. State and federal officials have opened a hate crime investigation into the attack.
The shooting suspect was arrested earlier today during a traffic stop in North Carolina. His Facebook page shows a picture of him wearing a jacket with white supremacist symbols on it.
Here with us to talk about the prevalence of hate crimes and hate groups in the U.S. is Phyllis Gerstenfeld. She's professor and chair of criminal justice at California State University Stanislaus and author of Hate Crimes, Causes, Controls, and Controversies. Phyllis, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So we've been watching the details of this tragic crime emerge through the day. As we mentioned, it's being referred to as a hate crime. How do we define a hate crime? What sets a crime aside as a hate crime?
At its simplest level, a hate crime is any criminal act that's motivated by the victim's group, and certain groups qualify, including race, religion, sexual orientation, and so forth.
And is there usually an intent to not only perpetrate the crime against the direct victims, but send some sort of message to the community that they're part of?
There may or may not be, but hate crimes are unique in that it does have that requirement that there's a motive that's based on the particular victimization. And so in some cases, the perpetrator may be thinking of sending a larger message. In some cases, they're really reacting to a particular situation, but they're always motivated by the victim's group.
And how common are hate crimes, as far as we know, around the United States?
That's a really hard question to answer because probably a very large percentage of them go unreported. We have police data. We have other kinds of reports. We know that they're not terrifically common. Last year, actually the year before, the FBI reported about fewer than 8,000 hate crimes in the United States, which in the grand scheme of things isn't that many. But as I said, it's probably a really small proportion of what happens.
And we mentioned hate groups. Do we know how many of those we have in the United States, organized groups that we consider hate organizations, ones that might perpetrate hate crimes?
We have an estimate. As again, it's a really hard thing to measure, and it's hard to tell whether a group is one person or a large group of people. But there are organizations that try to track that, and the current estimates are there's somewhere around probably about 1,000 organized hate groups in the United States.
We're talking about hate crimes and hate groups in the aftermath of last night's shooting in Charleston, South Carolina. We have Phyllis Gerstenfeld with us, a professor of criminal justice at California State University, author of a book called Hate Crimes. Now, Phyllis, we, of course, don't know that much about the motive of the particular suspect in this shooting. It's unclear whether this was a lone wolf act or maybe part of some kind of organized group. How do organized hate groups operate? Do we see more of these lone wolf attacks today?
Most of the organized hate groups in the last 10 or 15 years or so have really tried to distance themselves from violence, at least on the face of it. They've tried to portray themselves as being nonviolent. Some of them will say, "Oh, we don't hate anyone. We just love our own race." So on the face of it, they often disavow these acts of violence. But you know, underneath there's a message there, and they these groups tend to put out a lot of things on the internet and other things. So there's a lot of use of media that they have to communicate. They engage in active recruitment efforts. So while they may not be actively promoting violence, there's sort of an underlying message there with some of them.
Is there, do you think, a hope maybe to inspire lone wolf action not directly connected with the actual group itself?
Yeah, that's in fact some of them actually spoken out saying specifically that because they don't want to be open to lawsuits and other kinds of things, and they do like to portray themselves as being not extremist. So they don't want to be directly affiliated. And I believe I've seen some reports that already some of the extremist groups have come out over the last few hours and said, "Oh, we had nothing to do with this guy." And so they try and distance themselves that way.
Now, these kind of attacks are more common than we'd like, but still, thankfully, very rare. Maybe so rare that we can't say there's a profile of the type of person who does this sort of thing. But from hate crimes we've seen, is there a common thread? Are there common things that we see case after case?
We tend to. Most hate crime perpetrators tend to be young men. Most of them tend to not have an extensive criminal history. What we see is that a lot of them are people who were really detached. They didn't have a lot of friends, and they see extremism kind of reached out to them as a way to make them feel like they belong somewhere, like they're empowered.
Now, sometimes the media paints a picture of a lone actor, a lone wolf attacker being mentally ill or having views that are drastically outside the norm, far beyond the pale. Is it oftentimes the case that mental illness of some sort is at play here?
Not in most cases, no. In most cases, it's really not that far beyond the pale. We have people whose behavior is obviously a lot more violent than what most people would do, and yet they're not really all that different from ordinary people in a lot of ways, unfortunately.
And bringing up the issue of mental illness, there's always the concern that attributing mental illness as a cause stigmatizes the people with mental illness who will never be involved in anything at all like this.
Exactly. The vast majority of mentally ill people are nonviolent and don't do things like this. So it's hard to make that association.
Now, some people have already pointed to similarities between this attack last night and one here in Wisconsin a few years ago at a Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Do you see comparisons or similarities between the two from what we know so far?
From what we know so far, they seem similar in that we had a person who we know that the person who perpetrated the Sikh shootings was affiliated with white supremacist groups. He'd been in some bands and so forth. But we have here again a young man who sought out a religious organization and opened fire. So on the face of it, it seems very similar.
Now, I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on media coverage of cases like this. We're in the early stages here. It's easy to take maybe a sensationalist approach. It's a horrible crime, clearly, on the face of it. What do you see the media getting right and wrong when they cover stories like what just happened in Charleston?
I think one of the things that the media, everybody wants to know everything right away, and things unfold more slowly than people would like. There is a tendency to paint the perpetrators as being really aberrant, really, really different from everyone else, and I don't know that that's necessarily the case. There's always a lot of focus on how unusual they were, and I don't know that that's necessarily a particularly fruitful sort of thing.
Now, looking at the people who are victims of hate crimes, as you mentioned earlier, statistics are not solid on this, but do we know who the most common victims of hate crimes are as a group in the U.S.?
Yes, statistically, the most common victims of hate crimes in the U.S., at least from our reports, are African Americans, religious minorities, especially Jews and Muslims, and gay LGBT people. And also probably immigrants. Those numbers are particularly probably off because a lot of immigrants may be especially hesitant to contact authorities.
Now, from the research you've done on this topic over the years, are there things we could do from a legal standpoint or a societal standpoint to prevent future hate crimes?
From a legal standpoint, I mean, we've had hate crime laws in place now for 20 or 30 years in most states, and I don't think that, enacting laws or making the laws harsher are going to make any difference. We could put some tools in place to make them easier to use because there are very few hate crime convictions. No nationwide data, but in California, for example, in an average year, there's far fewer than 100 hate crime convictions. So we could put some tools in place to do that, but I think really prevention would be a better line of inquiry. And, finding out who are these people who are vulnerable to these kinds of messages from the hate groups, and what can we do to avoid having them become violent.
Phyllis, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for asking me.
That's Phyllis Gerstenfeld, professor and chair of criminal justice at California State University, Stanislaus.